and welcome into the Facts Not Feelings podcast, powered by BZ Consultants Group, with your host, Brooke Furness. Each week, I sit down with experts in their respected fields as we discuss how we can move this wonderful automotive industry forward by differentiating facts from feelings. Our conversation explores how my guests got to where they are today and how they achieve success. All right, let's jump in. In a world where technology zooms ahead and the automotive industry evolves ever rapidly, how do businesses not just adapt, but thrive by creating empowered experiences? Welcome into Facts Not Feelings. I am your host, Brooke Furness, and today we are zeroing in on people, process, and technology and how they converge to revolutionize the automotive industry. Join us as industry expert Duran Cage, founder of Cage Automotive, unveils the secrets to building success and empowering stakeholders in this dynamic landscape. Ready to shift gears? Let's dive in. Duran, welcome into the show, buddy. It's been a minute trying to get you on here, and I'm so excited to have you on right now.
Me too, Brooke. Thank you so much for having me. And it is long overdue. So I've been a fan watching from afar, and even though we do know each other, we're connected, but it is cool to be on here with you. So thank you for the invitation and let me be here.
Oh, you're so welcome. First off, let's give a big shout out to Larry. If it wasn't for Larry, I wouldn't know who you are. Like, I knew of you, but I was like, now we can actually we actually know each other now. And we're friends now. Before it's like, yeah, I've seen him. He's like kicking ass over here. I'm not sure what he's doing, but he's doing something. And I'm sure you get this question all the time. The first time I saw Cage Automotive, I was like, is he a dealership? Like, he's not. So do you get that a lot?
All the time. And the person who told me, they're like, hey, maybe you should use Cage Automotive. So when you call dealers, they'll think that you're calling to do like a dealer transfer or purchase or something. But it didn't work the way that they said. So, but yeah, I do get it all the time.
I had Fleming Ford on, I think it was about a year ago. And she goes, yep, every time I call, people thought I was doing some type of dealer trade or they're looking to buy, because she's like, nope, that's just my name, not a Ford dealership. So,
yep.
But it's good marketing. It's a great idea. I'm all for it.
Yeah, just doesn't work every time, but it works sometimes.
So close. All right, Dad, let's jump into this. Let's kick it off first off with the technology portion of it. So the question with that is, how should dealerships prioritize their tech integration to enhance their operational efficiencies?
So I would back up and make sure that we've had the proper conversations before the technology was even introduced, right? So to make sure that the tech that we already have, is it doing what it's supposed to? And are we using it at the maximum ability? Because sometimes we'll jump into some kind of technology because it sounds great, looks great, but we might already have that technology in-house. Like, it's already there. We're just not actually using it to the best of our ability. So first off is, do we already have it and how are we using it? And if we don't have it, great. What do we have that's close to it? And then what do we plan on doing with that technology? So just to give it an example would be, let's say it's a digital retailing widget tool, right? Well, if we're going to use that, before we get it, we all need to understand what is our primary goal of using this provider's online retailing software. Is it for, lead conversion, or is it for consumer experience? What are those things for? And then to get to the meat of your question, though, is who is going to be the champion behind it? That's really what I've seen, that stores that do really well with any kind of technology they put in place is there's typically that one, two, or three different people, hopefully somebody in leadership as well, that's really bought into the execution of whatever technology we want to put in. And we have the right people in place to make sure that, hey, we're talking about this weekly, we're having our accountability calls and making sure that, one, are we doing what the provider tells us we need to be doing? And then on the other side of that, is the provider doing the things that they said that they would be doing on their end?
Amen. And you and I know each other well enough to know that one thing I'm always trying to, as much as possible, educate people on is to work backwards or works forward. Why do you need that little button? Before you put a CT on your site, before you go and buy another great thing you saw at NADA or any other conference, why are you doing this? Is it because it looks cool and they promised you a lot of stuff with it and a lot of blah, 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 blah with it? Or have you actually went back and said, all right, my people here in the store, currently we need a chat provider or we need a text provider. Okay, great. Before that's even made, even though you know you actually do need it and there's nothing else in house that's doing that for you, okay, that's good to know. My question is, who all are you talking to make that decision? Is it just a unilateral, I am the GM, and so I'm going to make that decision? Or am I talking to every single person it's going to influence and to affect? I'm talking to the BDC. I'm talking to fixed ops, sales, finance, your reception. I mean, talking to every person in the dealership that it's going to affect and say, okay, now that we know we need this, does this product, this model, whatever software we're choosing, is this the right software for us? Now we know we need it, but knowing which software works best with your process. Because now you talk to your people, you know you need it, you've looked at everything, but the process part now is, okay, which one integrates best? Because it may be the coolest thing ever, but if it doesn't integrate with your DMS, doesn't integrate with your CRM, why are you getting it? Like, you're going to just fall back into paying for a tool that you never, ever will use and just lighting money on fire. So that is a little bit of a hot button with me. So, and I could not agree more with your answers there, Duran.
Yes. And that integration, I'm glad you said that, Brooke, because I didn't even bring that up. But that one, that I word typically is something that I will confirm and lead with that team is it integrated with your systems? Is it integrated with your DMS? Is it integrated with your CRM? Or is there a way to create that API to where, you know, we can help that vendor out and we're good? Because whenever there's not integration and we have, I don't have my phone on me, but I was going to hold up my phone, because anytime people have to use more than one tool or device, you might be able to get them to use two if it's a really great, but anything past that, there's balloons.
There's you had a like thing up earlier. Sorry, editing team.
I don't know where the balloons are coming from. Like, it's some kind of, I guess it's my eCAM software. But anyways, what are we integrated with the partners? Because if it creates friction there from an integration standpoint, it becomes a problem.
Amen. And it is, like, I've worked with dealerships that have, I'm just going to say, more than one DMS. And while some people hearing this thinking that's crazy, I don't disagree with you. That being said, is now you got to see, there's a reason why they have two DMSs. There's got to be a reason. So because of that, now you know there's going to be a massive integration issue. And it's not just one or two dealerships I've seen this way. So knowing, okay, well, it integrates with the front of house, everything, but back of house, not so much. Well, then what is the point of, one, don't have two DMSs. But number two is, if it doesn't integrate to the other DMS, then you've got another issue. So really looking at that, or I will also say, do your research on this one, please, because you may be told, like Duran said, he's verifies it. I cannot tell you how many times I have been told, oh, we integrate with blah, 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 or the software tool does all of this, rainbows and butterflies, promise you the world, you get in there and it doesn't. So before you ever stroke that check, talk to people and ask for not just one or two references, work your network and say, hey, have you heard about product XYZ? Does it really do everything that they're saying? Oh, it does? Great. All right. It doesn't. Where does it? Maybe the person that told you wasn't because they were being malicious and trying to lie to you. Maybe they were just told from up top at their company, hey, we do all this stuff. So please, please, please do your homework on this to understand whether it does everything it's supposed to and if the integrations are there.
Yes.
It's a big one. So let's go on to the people portion of it. The people aspect of this is, how can automotive companies ensure their staff are prepared and adaptable to these technological changes? Say that 10 times fast.
No, well, Brooke, you said something that really kind of answers this question, but we will go deeper on it, was make sure that everyone that's affected by this is involved, right? BDC, I heard you say that. I mean, BDC, your sales team, your whoever, even if it's the operator, if the operator is going to be influenced, or she's going to have to deal with this, or he, whoever that is, they all need to understand, okay, who is this company? What's this tool? And what is it there for? And then next thing is to have the training, you know, make sure that the proper training is being done. And this goes back to that champion, whoever that person is in store, that's going to be the one that's going to make sure that every person who's using this tool is actually going through it. Not that one person who gets everybody certified because they have the credentials. Not that anybody's still doing that, but
never, never.
But make sure that the whole team is engaged. And then on the other side of it, what I've seen that's been successful, and some companies already do this on the forefront, but if they're not, make sure that there's already like these weekly check-ins after the launch. Because no matter what happens, even when if people work with me, right, there's typically always like there's a heavier uplifting time or a heavier onboarding time than anything. Like that's when the questions come in because nobody really has questions before everything goes live. They're like, yeah, let's go. And then once it goes live, that's when reality hits. And so what I would encourage is just to make sure that on the people side, that after install is done and the product goes live, have a call that's going to be 72 hours after. Have a 24-hour check-in with that leader. And then a weekly call, 2 week, and then let it go to a monthly performance call or whatever that thing is. But at the very beginning, make sure that everybody is on board with the execution and the rollout of that tool. Because I've seen so many times where a new tech provider comes in and they install something, but then there's like a different team that does the install. Yep. And then there's like a different person after the install. And what I would say is whoever's after the install, see if you can get their information before that support team is done, if that makes sense. But that's what I would say, is just make sure the training, there's pre-training done. We're ready to go there. People are certified for the product. And then afterwards that we have a really good dialed in process on how we're going to keep the communication tight. Because to me, what I've seen, Brooke, and I'm sure you have as well, the success or failure of any program really comes down to communication.
Yeah.
You know, like there's not really bad. I'm not going to say there's not bad vendors out there, but I would say there's bad communicators sometimes. And if all they have to do is just communicate and keep that open line of communication open, then you can typically solve just about any problem with most of these partners.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there, Duran. Like I'm going through, and I worked for a company at one point where the person that sold it, then there's the person that goes and installs, like you said, and then there's someone afterwards. So I just got in the habit of also, if you are the one installing the product, please make sure you're talking to the right person. That's another one that's like talking about people is like you're having all this communication with Billy Bob over here, and Billy Bob has no say or whatsoever. So make sure you're just communicating the right person. But we'd go in. And so now it's like, when I look back at that, it definitely helped me on what I do today of saying, whether I'm working with a client or, hey, I'm even looking at products myself and services myself to say, okay, so after everything is said and done, where does this go? Oh, it goes to support at blah, 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 blah. Okay, do you need to be copied on this? Because they may tell you that that needs to be done, but take that proactive step to say, well, does anybody else need to be copied on this? And it might be for a while that the people that install there, the salesperson wants to be involved, but not after that. And then you're frustrated that no one's responding to you. Well, did you ever take the time to figure out who needs to be, going back to communication, who needs to be contacted? And speaking with Corey Smith about a year ago, and he does all this, you know, a lot of training and going through, and he goes, that's one of the biggest things is the follow-up, because so many people are like, set it, forget it, wash your hands, I'm out. I'm like, no, when everything's going to go crazy is right after something launches. So I love that you brought that up. It's such a vital piece to making sure that success happens with whatever process or service that you're bringing into the dealership there. So let's go with the tech portion a little bit more here. So we've got tech that's evolving like crazy. How can businesses maintain a personal touch in customer service when all this tech is surrounding them?
Showcase the human as much as possible. You know, like what I would say, because, you know, we know ChatGPT with AI or whatever AI tool that we wanted to use, a conversational AI, there's a lot of great tools that are out there. And so now I think most of us humans are now at the point where like, we're asked the question, is that AI? Did they actually email that? Did they actually reply? So figure out ways to bring in the human part. And so obviously one that I'm going to bring up is video, because I think video, using that in terms of technology, it's hard for me to think of many other better ways than to get out that human aspect of technology other than video or some kind of audio tool or both, you know, to be able to record a vehicle and send it out to people. But then even on our side as partners in success, when I send a video after the technology has been onboarded or just checking in to see how's the program doing, using it with a video, it just shows that extra layer of care. They're like, okay, this person isn't just going through it with the motions, but adding that extra level of human, whether it's video, whether it be voice, whether it be, hey, there's nothing wrong with even throwing a handwritten note from time to time and taking a picture. Isn't it wild? You could actually take a picture of a handwritten thank you card, put a QR code on that picture in the note and send it to somebody. And now you've taken a human element and slowed down to have a thank you card. And then also embedded a QR code that could link to, you know, a video. It could link to whatever as an extra sort or even an e-card. But using those little elements is what takes the technology to the next level. Even with chat, even with online retailing, whatever tool you do, figure out ways that you can add a human element to that experience through pictures, through videos, through voice. And it seems to amplify up any tech product that you use when you add in that extra human element to it.
Amen. And it's, I'm sure that you can attest this as well. You get thank yous and whatever, and that all thank yous, they're all great. I can tell you the businesses out there that have taken the time to handwrite something to me, or yes, you'll get little gifts, whatever. And those are all great, but it's the hand, for me, at least it's that handwritten note that you took the time to write that. I mean, I'm one of the, I send out a lot of like birthday cards and different cards. And, but it's, I right behind the camera here, I've got a whole drawer full of just cards because it's like, I do thank you. It's just something that it speaks so much that you, in the chaos of a, today's world where everything we have, you know, 3 second memory and 3 second attention span, that someone took the time to actually write that, it just makes such a difference. So if you're not doing it already, I'd highly, highly recommend it.
1000%. I mean, it's what helps create a brand, right? You know, because so many different brands utilize the same technology, right? Think of a CRM. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of dealerships that use the same CRM, but why is it that one dealership takes that CRM and does all these different things with the technology components of it and add their human element? And then another dealership can have that same CRM and say that CRM is the worst thing in the world and they're not using any of the tools out of it. And it's just because one was able to really lean in on that CRM and use those elements, the technology that it had, and sprinkle a little extra human dust on top of it, versus one is kind of operated in that set it and forget it. And there's not many technology platforms out there that you can leave set it and forget it for too long before you run into a problem.
Yeah. And you see CRMs all the time. Like, I mean, that's, you kind of live and breathe that a lot of what you do. And that's something you go back to what you said earlier was about the not utilizing the technology you have. I would love to see a dealership use 50% of the CRM. I mean, for the most part, it's like your brain, you use 10% of it. And then you're spending a lot of money on that thing. Like, it's not cheap. And yet there's, especially with everything going to where we're going with, you know, cookieless and blah, 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 that first party data is more important than ever. But we treat it as like, meh, it's a necessary evil. We have to have it. Suck. I don't want to use it. And people are, your process and how, so we're going to get to in a little bit here, this next question here, but the process is such that we just, whether it's malicious or not, we can't take the time to search for it. I mean, you and I have been in the industry long enough to know that there was a day before CRMs. It was just Rolodex. And I know I'm dating myself, but Rolodex and index cards. And that's it. Like that was your CRM. I mean, you maybe had some type of Excel sheet type of thing, but that was about it. I mean, everything's at our fingertips, and to utilize that instead of spending so much money on acquiring the customer when they're already in your book of business. So that brings me to the process section of this. So how can automotive businesses streamline their processes to improve both efficiency and customer satisfaction?
See, Brooke, you and I could talk about 8 hours and charge money on this question.
But yes, we could.
But I'll back it down to something that a call that I had before this. I was telling an individual is the same thing. I would answer this question for a business. Whoever's listening to this, is in order for anything to work process wise, it needs to have a playbook. It needs to be written down. Or if you're some reason, if you're one of those people that doesn't like to write things down, then you need to type it out. I am a writer for some reason. I'm showing my age too. But please get a playbook. It's amazing to me from a process standpoint, how many businesses, dealerships, or anything, or any type of business doesn't write out their processes in their playbook. It's amazing to me. And so that's what I would say. So this individual person I was talking to before this one, it was like, I asked him, I said, where do you want to go? So then he lays out all this stuff that he wants to go. And I said, okay, so where's the plan for that? What do you mean? How are you keeping yourself accountable to that, what you just laid out of what you're going to do? Like how every single day is going to be what you said it was going to be. And he was like, it's just in here. And I said, but what's in here doesn't work all the time. Like all of us, there's so much that's going in here. I mean, you got to think from social media to our house life, to our friends, our partner, there's so much in here. How could we possibly be able to like use this like a computer and put it over here and be like, okay, I know this whole process and I know when it needs to get done. So having a playbook for any process. So your phone ups should have a process that's written down. Your sales process when a customer comes in should have a process. When they leave, your service department, your phone, every single, your internet leads, every single customer interaction point should have some kind of process for that. And then the same thing when it comes to technology. Now, I'm not saying we need to have some 1,000-page playbook, but for the things that are important, there should be a playbook. Hey, our chat provider, here's our playbook for that. Our digital retailing, here's how our playbook works for that. But having a process that's laid out, and then that needs to come from leaders as well. So it cannot be what I'll see a lot with process, and especially when we're talking about technology, is I talked about the champion, we'll throw it to that person. That can't be thrown to that person and they do it all. Yeah. It has to have leadership, GMs, GSMs, or owners involved with that champion or whoever, and it's written down. And they have a written out process, maybe, you know, whether it's 10 bullet points or it's an order 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But having a plan laid out is step one in terms of putting together a process, a tight process.
Yes. I mean, I'm going through, I was just speaking with a client last week. We were just kind of going through their BDC in general. I go, so best practices here. Let's just walk through. If you're on cars.com versus the tier one site versus I'm actually on the website, or I clicked on an ad, those are completely different customers. And the person that's on, we'll say Edmunds versus the customer that's on Auto Trader, that is a different cut. That is a completely different customer. So how you interact with them should not be the same. The same thing goes for a Facebook lead. The Facebook marketplace lead comes in. If you don't answer that in 0.2 seconds, you've lost the customer. So knowing that are we hooked up, going back to the process and people and product, is that in that case, if that comes in, we know that Facebook wants to keep everyone on their ecosystem, and it's not, and your chat provider, you may be paying for a tool that is supposed to integrate into Messenger, but it probably doesn't. So there are some companies that do a really good job, but please, if you're, that brings that full circle to know, I did this, I inspect it all. And just because once again, a company is saying they do, go back and double check it. And if please have different processes for every lead provider that comes in, because not all leads are the same. They're not. It's an opportunity we have, and we get one shot at that first impression. And I just about broke out into Eminem, like one shot. The editors will have fun with that one, but
no, that's so good though, bro. Like, gosh, that's so good and if you're a provider listening to this, bring that with you, you know, like don't let, because not every dealer knows how to create a different process for different opportunities or different marketing channels that come into their CRM or whatever tool they're using. So I know there are some providers out there that do this. Like they're, let's say they're a trade-in lead company, and they give you all their templates. They're like, hey, here's the templates. Here's the subject lines. Here's a suggested workflow, not telling you how to run your business, but here's something that you can grow from. That's ideal, because at the marketing channel, from not just from templates and processes, but even from a training standpoint to what our team is saying to those customers that came from those channels, it's all so important. Like those little details really do matter. So I'm glad you brought that point up.
It's the little things. So let's move on a little bit to how important, which I know the answer is, but I'm going to expound on it a little bit. How important is it for automotive businesses to create empowered experiences for their customer?
Ooh, for the customer. Mm. Well, so I talk about this a lot in terms of empowerment, but the best way that I could explain the empowerment piece would be, let's just play a story real quick. So let's say we're thinking about buying a car, and we go online and we say, hey, I noticed this car here. Number one, is it available? And two, what would be a better payment here? If I give you my information, would you lean me towards finance or would lease be a better option for me? Question mark. Send. If we send that to three or four different dealerships, what are we going to hear? And you'll know by how the employees are empowered, right? Because just that first half that of what I just said, we just empowered a customer. That means our site was set up for maybe there's some items there that lets them play with the lease and lets them play with the finance purchase, but they still have more questions. So at least we're empowering our customer. That's number one. But then number two, when it comes into our team, who's empowered to answer that question? And if it's not that person who received it, then the next question you have to ask is, are you okay with that customer talking to multiple different people? Mm-hmm. That's going to be the next step. And then if we're okay with them talking to multiple people, how long should that customer go before they get their question answered? Because when the team is empowered, the person who receives it should be empowered to answer that question no matter what. And even if they can't give the exact answer, maybe they cannot say, I can work on this lease for you. What's it going to be like? But they should be empowered at least to go deeper in that so then they could get it to the right person who can, and they can do it in a timely manner. So what this would look like would be that employee that's empowered says something like, hey, I'm so glad that you asked that. If you don't mind me asking, could you kind of tell me a little bit about your driving habits? Because that might affect what would be a better option for you depending on the miles that you drive monthly and yearly. So that's going deeper because we're going to listen to what that customer had to say. The opposite of that, when we're not empowered, you know where I'm going, is going to be, that's a great question. The best way to find that out is for you to come on in and test drive. How soon can you be here? Could you be here this afternoon or this evening?
When can you come in?
Yes. And those responses are the ones that like almost are driving me out of our industry.
Yep.
Because we're as much as we're advancing with technology and tools, we're going backwards with our communication and engagement. And so we have to be careful that if we're empowering customers to go further down the road online, then we've got to empower our employees to go further down the road with them and just train them on how to do it using our managers that have been doing this for so long, been in the business longer than I have and you, and sometimes both of us put together. But those employees just need to teach the next generation how to do these things online, over the phone, via text, via email, and let it go through that way, because that will attract better employees into our industry, because now they don't feel like they're sitting there as the in-between person. You know, it's like that friend that's in between two friends that, you know, they're dating, but you have to be the one in between.
The middleman.
Well, she said that she doesn't like your breath. Well, he said that, you know, well, that's what most BDC departments are doing. It's like, he said, she said, and I'm like, no, let the person in the middle be the person that's in the game with them. And that's what the value of an empowered experience does, is it's going to allow you to retain your employees longer because they don't feel so helpless. And then the customers are going to love it because it should save their transaction time, cut it in half, and that they're dealing with people that can actually answer their questions.
I love everything about that. Like, you're going through, we've got the cars rule that's coming out of the pike here, right? And it was stalled for a little bit, but it's still all steam. It's still going to happen. And in there, it specifically says that first response, you have to answer price question. If it's about a specific model, if you just say Toyota, you have a Jeep. Let's always look at this, the Jeep logo on your shirt there. So I'll say a Jeep Wrangler. If I inquire about a Jeep Wrangler, I don't have to get a stock number. I said Jeep Wrangler. That first response, I don't care if it's phone, text, email, You have to address price. So are your BDC teams empowered enough that they can answer that? Or we're just going to ping pong back and forth. There was a study done. It was a couple years ago, probably like 6-7 years ago, about if you leave the consumer at the desk for like, I don't know, it's like a minute. It goes from like 15 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute. I'm sure you've seen this, how quickly they are pulling out their phones and shopping you. So to leave the consumer by themselves to be like, oh, I'll get back to you in an hour, or I'll get back to you in 24 hours. Last I checked, if someone's on our lot, we're not going to be like, hey, you know what? Fill out this form and then I may or may not get back to you. But you got to fill it out first. And then I'm going to ask you, I don't really give a shit what you have to, what questions you have. My first response is going to be, when can you come in? Like, we're not doing that to our people in our law, but yet we're doing that to our phone calls. We're doing that to anything that comes in off an internet lead digitally at all, which that is the majority of your traffic. And so we've got to make this switch, this mindset switch, to know that those customers are probably more important than the ones coming on their lot because they've already done all the research. So that's it. It's definitely something that drives me bonkers when I look at stuff. I'm like, no, please don't do this anymore.
Well, because Brooke, it comes down to, I didn't want to go here, but I'll go there. It's this drives the automotive industry and the behavior. So when an online team is driven to get paid X amount of dollars to get your butt here, they're going to use the creative senses to do that. But imagine this, and I've had some stores do this, and it was phenomenal. Some are still doing it now. When they reward the behaviors that drive an experience to get people here, it's a win-win. So I'll give you an example was when – we had a team that we got the owner to bonus them every time they shared the online retailing tool experience. So think of digital retailing tool. A customer comes in from a third party website, let's say cars.com, comes in, and then the rep does their call, text, email. We reach out, we send a video, but the customer does not engage because not every customer has the time to speak all day long like we do. Well, then we followed up with a link that says, hey, I didn't catch you on the call. Or I didn't catch you when I reached out, but here's something that a lot of our customers have taken advantage of to start your process online. If you're there, feel free to explore. If not, no worry. Let me know how I can help. And they would send this link out. And what would happen is one out of every five customers would hook on that link and they'd be like, boom. And then now they're going down that journey. But now we put them on our website. We got them to our virtual showroom, and that led them to having a higher closing percentage. So instead of that dealer like focusing so much on getting them here, he reversed the incentive to getting them to the website and paying them good money to get them there. And it ended up getting us further down the road in sales. And so I say that because it kind of ties into what we're talking about, is one of the things that can help improve technology is maybe your compensation goes behind how we use that technology to create more sales and better experiences for customers. So that's a great point that you brought up.
And I love your example there because it's so often we're still stuck in this old school way of doing things, whether it be, in this case, salary or paying someone or bonuses. And the same thing as there's so much talk about CDP. And while CDPs are great in what they can do, they're awesome. Unless we change in-house what our processes are, or I'll say the pay structure, we're going to run into the same issue of garbage in, garbage out. Because right now, so-and-so is paid on appointments only. Well, they're going to only put the appointments in that are going to most likely show. Or, hey, you get paid on appointments. Well, they're just going to throw a crap load of appointments in there, whether they're good or not. Then the salespeople are like, well, I'm not going to search for it because I want credit for that because I get paid if this customer shows up or whatever. So really going back and looking, what is your pay structure like? And are you doing all this technology you're bringing into it? You've got to look at the people and process first, going back to what we very first said, because now the pay structure is still so archaic and you're trying to put something new with it. And I'm not going to say it's not going to work, but it's the ROI of what it could be. And I'll even say that reports are not going to be that great because you got to keep cleaning it because there's so much garbage in with your first party data and your CRM and your DMS. So you brought up a really good point there. So thank you for that, Mr. Duran. I appreciate that.
Hey, it goes both ways. Thank you.
All right, let's switch to marketing a little bit. This is also one that like always gets me when we're talking about BDC because they have no idea what they're doing, or they do, but they're never brought in with, oh, by the way, hey, we're running this ad. So how can automotive companies align their strategies with the rapid pace of technology advancement?
Yeah, so definitely you hit the nail on the head. I cannot tell you how many times internet people get a lead and they're like, what is this? And nobody told us about it. I'm like, nobody told you about that? Like, and there's like a big one that's happening now that's like sweeping the country where everybody's using this provider. And without saying who they are, it's a provider that is creating a lot of leads because it creates this, you're going to get an extra discount or price saving on the VDP. So it's done really well. The button looks good. It does. But Think about what that is now. Let's back up for a second. Everybody listening to this, we're creating a widget that's on the site that's telling the customer you can save more if you click here. If that happens, when that customer clicks there, number one, what must the customer get? Mm-hmm. Instantly, they've got to see what they said they were going to get. Mm-hmm. But then once they've received their savings, now there's the employees in the dealership that have to keep that message going. And so if I'm, you know, I've got my headsets on and I get a customer request and I don't know what they got was more of a price-driven message, then I'm going to reach out with something that says something like, hey, Brooke, I noticed that you looked at this make, model, blank. How can I help? Or what's the next step you'd like to take? Or when you'd like to come in? And I'm not saying anything to Brooke about what was important to her versus that intro needs to be something that says, hey, Brooke, congratulations. I see you already took advantage of the savings coupon. High-fiving you real quick. Hey, just so I know, is it just this vehicle that you wanted to apply the coupon on? Or are you on multiple different cars that you saw on our website? Question mark. You see, the difference is it changes because it's like you're telling the customer, oh my gosh, you did something that the customer that are buying cars right now that are saving money, this is what they're doing. Great job, Brooke. But without that, everybody's kind of just, ugh. Like somebody earlier today, they were like, that lead is trash. It's garbage. I'm like, it was on your website. Don't say that. Like, you can't say that lead source is trash because that lead source is a button that's on your website. No, you just don't know how to talk to them yet. Mm-hmm. And so that goes to your question, why that's so important. The marketing channels, whether it's a trade tool provider, whether it's I'm going to get you a discount, your e-price provider, whatever it is, the BDC team and that leadership team, they need to know first before it goes live. So then that way we can get our templates in line. We can make sure that we're personalizing and we're saying the right things to the customer, but we're all on the same page. Because if we need to make pivots, it's easier to make pivots when that BDC team knows who the marketing team is. If that BDC team does not know who the marketing team is, they are going to bash you. And they're going to say that your product sucks or your service sucks when really it doesn't. It could be just along the communication and how we streamline that process.
Amen. I cannot tell you the number of times where I'll go through and like you said, it's either some special that's going on, some blah, blah that's going on, and they have no idea. I mean, I remember training on a lead management back years ago, and I go, has anyone actually taken the time to go through and see what happens when you goes to cars.com, to Auto Trader, to all these different things? Has anybody taken the time to see what your consumer is going through? So when the customer sends something through and it says they've clicked on, and it comes through the XML format to say, this came through as best price offer, this came through, and the customer actually put notes in there, but you didn't take the time to read it. So now the customer is so upset with you because they said in there that texting was the best platform, and now you're emailing them, or they're asking about these questions. They're like, you didn't answer a single question I just sent over. And some of it as well, I will say there are tier one sites that not everything pushes over to CRM because of how ADF XML is. Not everything's going to push over. So your customer could have spent, let's say, hours building a vehicle, but what you get sent over to you is this much. You might not even get price. So how do you approach those customers? And really going through, if I can encourage people, please go through the process of what your consumer is seeing, whether that's, like I said, definitely third party. You may be on a Toyota and they typed in Toyota, but because of how the algorithm is, it's going to shoot up some Ford to them or some Jeep to them or something like that. So they may not even know that they really may not know that they're submitting the lead to you. And it's not just a line they're giving out. That line gets thrown out a lot. I get that. There are a lot of times, though, that is 100% correct. They had no idea because of how the algorithm keeps bringing it up. Or they're submitting a lead with four states away because that provider is paying the platinum, titanium, gold metal medallion status. So it gets brought to the top. And now that person gets the lead. And you're like, wait, why am I getting? And then the customer's like, I didn't submit anything. So please do your due diligence and understand how the consumer is shopping to know that you put yourself in that position. And it's a really something that also kind of drives me crazy. I'm like, no, how the consumer is shopping. Like, this is a big one to me.
Yeah. Well, it goes back. It kind of goes hand in hand with us. You know, when we talked about writing down that playbook and that process, when everybody understands that, it becomes so much more simple when we're looking at those interactions and we're coaching our people. because we would catch that. If every day, if the people listening to this, if you're in leadership, every day you should be looking at those interactions within your system and looking at, okay, what did Brooke say here? What did Duran say here? Oh, okay, this is good. Oh, wait, Brooke, we should probably coach her up on this. And it might sound crazy because some leaders, when I say that, I say dial in on your interactions and dialogue. And they're like, I don't know if I have the time. I'm like, no, we do have the time, because when I was in New Mexico selling cars, way back when I was a little kid, what were managers doing? They watched you like a hawk.
Yep.
I'm talking about they're watching Duran's steps. They're watching my buddy KC, my best friend. They're watching everything that we're doing. And let us have a customer that doesn't get a test drive and they leave. Let us have a customer who got a write-up and we didn't too. You know what I mean? Everything had a flow. And the leaders, all they did was watch you. They were either desking the deal or they were watching the lot. Well, now the difference is, leaders that are listening, is now you're either desking a deal, but now you almost have to watch your lot. But your lot is not just your physical lot anymore. Mm-hmm. Your lot is now what's happening within your CRM. Your lot is now what's happening on your website. Your lot is now your VDPs. You know, like, so your lots have now been spread out so much, but your attention should be more on the digital lot than it should be on the physical lot, because the physical lot's just not as busy. And if it is busy, then you're going to find and hire somebody that can be your floor manager for your digital experience, you know, but it's so important.
I am just going to say yes to all that, because you said it perfectly. So I'm not even going to comment on that one. Okay, before we wrap up here, what is one piece of advice you'd give to our awesome industry looking to stay ahead in this rapidly changing environment?
Stay human. You know, we touched on this today, but stay human. So take whatever technology that you get and always ask, how can we humanize this technology? So when you add the human experience element into it, that's what creates separation between you and any other dealership that you could call a competitor or something like that. Because right now we're in that pre-2020, we'll call it that, pre-2020 time, where inventory is okay. You know, inventory is pretty even. Used cars is scary. Used cars is a scary market. But the one thing that is the common separator between everybody is how intentional you are with the experience using the tools and the technology that you have.
Amen. We can buy a car anywhere for the most part. I can buy whatever at this point. I'm going to go with the one that, in fact, I was just talking about this week with a colleague, and we just said, it's crazy how customer service has just taken a nosedive. Like, it's not existent. Like, you will pay more for that customer experience because they're treating you like a human. And we get so caught up in yes, there's been a lot of things that affected this, but it's nuts when I go into a store, I go into a restaurant, whatever it may be, or just online. It's like, man, there have been more bad customer experiences than I've ever had in my life. It's like, man, if you just do your job and you could just do the bare minimum, like acknowledge the customer, like just do the bare minimum. And people are like, oh my God, they're amazing. They're awesome. Like, well, we set the bar pretty low on this one. So yes, please take the time to do that. Have that human aspect. And AI is great. All this automation is great. You need that human in the scenario to know that the customer is still there and they know that you are human. So I could not agree with more with that. But Duran, we're at that point of the show where we are jumping into the lightning round with Duran Cage. So for those that are watching, you can see his QR code right below here. For those that are listening in podcast land, how can they get in touch with you and how can they find you, Duran?
Yep. So they can just go on Google and just type in Duran Cage, D-U-R-R-A-N, or you can easily find me on like LinkedIn, Facebook, some of those platforms. That's where I'll be. But yeah, anywhere, all you gotta do is just Google it, or like she said on the QR code, and I'm right there and I'm pretty responsive.
And you definitely want to get in touch with this human being. He's not only an incredible human, this guy is incredibly smart. So definitely get in touch with him. So let's go to the next question. The show is called Facts, Not Feelings. So whether it's in your personal life, whether it's in your professional life, how are you distinguishing facts from feelings?
Oh, Through research. I'm serious because I have to do this at home with my family. It happens all the time. whenever I get into my feelings, I always go back to research and just say, what do the facts say? You got to do it. So when my wife says something about my pants or my shoes, or even if a dealer says something about, hey, what about this? Or I don't like this tool. Hey, Mr. or Mrs. Dealer, before we say we don't like something, let's get into the facts and let's see what it has to say.
So before the next one, are we complaining about shoes? Because all I've ever seen are the cool gray 11s on you. So we can't be complaining about those at all.
We do debate about shoes from time to time because they like Nikes. I only like to wear Jordans. And so sometimes I know they're the same.
But they're not.
I have with the Jordan brand. And so, but no, that's it. But I do love kicks. I don't have the display case like Brooke yet, but it is on my vision board. We just did our vision boards. And so I'm working on it. I put on my phone to get a bigger house with bigger area to put some J's.
I love it. I've been so good. I got called out last week on the show that like, well, what do you mean you've been slowing? I'm like, because I bought so many last year, I have to calm down. Like I broke down and bought a pair this past week, but I had a gift card for it. So it was okay. But I haven't, that's the first I purchased since November. I'm like, you know, this has been like, that's like 3 years in shoe years for me. So like, I've been so good about not buying J's.
Which one did you just get?
Well, I say one, there was actually more than one, but I have three pairs of shoes that don't fit me anymore. So Jordan ones, slip-ons. And I got them when they first released and they don't fit me. So I was like, I've been eyeing them forever to get them. So I replaced two of mine. And then there was a Jordan 1 Low SE that's got like denim blue. You can only get on Nike, but it's got denim blue and it's got the leather in the back. And I've been eyeing that forever. And then they all went on sale. I was like, well, I guess that's a sign I got to get them.
I just bought a pair of the 6 rings. They were black on black with the platinum leather. And I just... they reminded me, the reason why, you know, my story behind Jordans that most people don't know is because I could not afford them and my parents couldn't buy them for me like that when I was in middle school. And so I had cousins that did have some money and they would give me the pair I wanted was the patent leather. I wanted them so bad, especially the grays. Like they had the North Carolina blue and they gave me one of my cousins gave me the clear on clear that was 2 sizes bigger than my feet. And the other one gave me the black on black with the red bottom. And man, I wore them to my feet busted through them. And so I always said one day I get to the point where I could buy a couple J's for myself. And so, but that's why I've been this big Jordan fanatic because I'm a big fan of his. But those were kicks that I was not able to get. And I always said one day I wanted some. Not at the level of where Brooke's at. I'll get there. I'm still working on that.
No, very similar. It was the same thing. We couldn't afford them growing up. And so my mom did buy my first pair. It was the 14s in 98. And so after that, I go, okay, this is my addiction. So, I made sure I worked at Foot Locker, never took home a paycheck. Yeah. So when I started collecting, I made it very, you know, just because like, once again, it was, so I'm trying to, I don't know how old I was at that point. I would have been, oh God. High school? I think it was high school at that point. It was close to high school. And so from then on, it's the same thing. Like, I know that our family can't afford this, but that's also why, like, now when I'm buying shoes and the, you know, bots have taken over, I'm like, for those people that really just want to buy it because it means something to them, it's different. Like, we could also talk about that for 7 years.
Oh, yeah. It is different.
Sure. All right. So let's round it out with, if you could have any superpower, what is it going to be?
Oh. This is going to put me in the weird, but it would be to fly or go through portals.
Yeah, I get that. That's like the number one answer is to fly or teleportation.
Yeah, teleport. That's what I was looking for. Teleport would be like, I watch movies at night before I go to sleep sometimes, like 30 minutes before I go to sleep, just so I can have dreams where I'm teleporting. I enjoy those dreams all the time. So yeah, teleporting and flying.
Oh, I love it. To be able to get, and plus like when you travel a lot, to be able just to be in one spot and then a second later be in another spot, that would be really nice.
Especially when you're 6'5" and like I just came back from New York a couple days ago and it was not a good experience. I mean, they picked the 2 biggest guys. I mean, I looked at the guy before I sat down and I said, really? And he said, really? I'm like, really? And he said, I know, really. And so we sat down and like,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was like three of me had like swallowed each other. And then it was like this. It's terrible.
Please tell me you had an aisle seat. Long didn't have a middle seat. Did you have a middle seat?
It didn't matter. It was an exit row. So I'm like, oh. I got an exit row seat. I'm good. But they put, and the exit row seat in between was like the hard thing. Yep. It was Delta. And it was a smaller plane because I'm in Memphis and big planes don't fly from Memphis to New York. And so it's the smallest plane. Using the restroom, my neck is like that. And so, yeah, teleportation.
Hands down. Okay, let's just go straight out. Yeah, you'll get there a little quicker with teleportation as well.
Yeah. Not made for big people.
Oh, I cannot thank you enough. It's been such a pleasure. Always a pleasure learning from you and always a pleasure chatting with you. Like I said, everyone, if you've not had a chance to meet Duran, this is your first time meeting him virtually, get in touch with this human being. He is such an incredible human being. And I, once again, thank you so much to Larry for making that introduction. Because, I'm like, dang, he's a cool dude. Like, I learned a lot from you, but it's just, you're just a good human being. So Larry, thank you. And Duran, thank you for being on the show. I super appreciate it.
Brooke, thank you so much as well. I mean, you're excellent, your expertise. And yes, thank you, Larry, if you're listening to this, because love you too, man. You put together a great group of people. So, but yes, thank you, Brooke. And I'm a big fan. So thank you.
The feeling is mutual. With that, everyone, you all know the drill at this point. Find a way to serve today. Find a way just to help someone, whether that's a colleague, a neighbor, a family member, a friend, someone, just make their day a little bit better. You can open a car door. It can be a kind smile. Just do something to make their day just a little bit better. With that, everyone, we will see everybody next week. You've been listening to Facts Not Feelings with Brooke Furness. Thank you for taking the time to listen. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Leave us a rating. If you know a friend or a colleague will benefit from today's episode, share it with them. Until next week, find a way to serve someone. Find a way to help your neighbor. Remember, we are all in this together.